Hey, what's up, guys? It's your favorite dead duo. And today's Rewind is not dead. No, wait. It is totally dead.
Because today is our Halloween episode.
Oh, I am so excited. I am ready for this paranormal case to have its own episode, and there is no better time than now.
That's right. Today we are talking about... Drum roll, please. And the Perrin family.
Yay!
This case is one of the most well-known Ed and Lorraine Warren cases. Plus, it started one of the best horror franchises, The Conjuring.
Yeah, we have briefly touched on this case before, but for those of you who don't know, the Perrin family moved into a beautiful farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island, in 1971. While living in this house, the Perrins experienced several demonic and paranormal occurrences.
Carolyn Perrin found the Warrens and brought them to her family's home in 1974. The Warrens would visit the farmhouse 6 different times. Let me tell you, I've been dying to talk about this paranormal case. I think maybe we should start a Warren series. Thoughts?
Continue.
Can that be this week's question?
Sure.
Anyways, before we get started, we just want to tell you all that we have a website now. Go visit us at thedeadrewindpodcast.weebly.com. That's at thedeadrewindpodcast.weebly.com. Or you can just go follow us on Instagram at thedeadrewindpodcast. We would love to hear from you guys about the episodes, about any suggestions you have for an episode, or just overall want to hear from you guys.
Yeah. Well, we also have a new way to interact with you guys. Once you are done listening to our episode, head over to Spotify if you are not already there and answer the question found at the bottom of the episode description. We would love to hear from you guys, and you may not even get a shout out on the podcast. And with that being said, we will be right back. And we're back. Let's get right into this episode, shall we?
We shall. I first would like to say that these stories that we're about to share with you come directly from Andrea Perrin, who is the oldest of the Perrin girls. Sips tea. Here we go.
I'm sorry.
Big episode coming at you guys. Let's start. Most know about the Perrin family. Roger and Carolyn Perrin, plus their 5 daughters, Andrea, Nancy, Christine, Cindy, and April, were just looking for a fresh start. The parents did not have much luck because they didn't have the money to buy a home large enough for the family of 7. Wanting to give up, Carolyn Perrin came across the 9-room farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island. Without really talking to Roger about the home, Carolyn Perrin put down the $500 deposit, and the family began to scrape together money to buy the large home. During their frequent visits to the home over those 5 months, no paranormal activity occurred.
Okay, wait, so like... She didn't tell them about the home at all? Did she tell them they were moving at least?
She was like, yeah, here's this home I saw that I've already put a deposit on. And he was like, oh, dang. And so then they were like...
They needed the dough.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, it did not take long for the parents to finally move into the house. On moving day, Andrea Perrin was walking a box into the family's new home. She walked through the dining room only to see a man standing in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Strange.
Continue.
Thinking the man was one of the men helping the family move, she greeted him and continued on. The strange man did not respond. He just stood there, watching the previous owner packing up his remaining belongings. Once Andrea reached the kitchen, she asked her mom who the strange man was. Carolyn Perrin was shocked at the question and assured her daughter that there was nobody in the home. Andrea was not the only one who saw the strange man, though. As Christine, Cindy, and Nancy trailed into the kitchen, they also asked their mom about the strange man in the dining room. Carolyn became a little concerned about because her girls were seeing things that weren't there, but there was one thing that was said to her while talking with the neighbor. The neighbor said the previous owners also left lights on at night, plus the owner said to leave some lights on for the girls so they don't get scared.
The strange man was only the beginning, though. Carolyn started to keep a journal of all of the experiences that the family had. One occurrence happened while Carolyn was in the barn. When she walked in, she saw a hand Sith hanging from the ceiling. She found it odd, but it was an old barn, so she dismissed it and went on with her business.
I don't just see a hand Sith and think, oh man, it's just an old barn.
Well, it is an old barn. Things you would find in an old barn.
Barn?
Yeah, an old barn.
What's a barn? I mean, wait.
I'm going to move on. Suddenly, Carolyn heard some strange noises and noticed that the Sith was falling off of the wall and coming right for her. Why are you laughing? This is very serious stuff. She managed to escape with only a few bruises, but she thought it was strange that the Sith had fallen right then and right there.
It's a bit drafty up there.
In another encounter... Oh, gosh. I can't even get through this without laughing. Let me just say, these do come from the Perrin family, so I'm...
All right. I've emphasized that already.
In another encounter, Carolyn was getting out of the shower when she was attacked by a coat hanger. In one of the most famous and vicious encounters, though, Carolyn Perrin was napping on the living room couch. She felt a sharp pain on her leg, and when she examined her calf, she found a pool of blood and a circular wound on her calf.
And it's probably just a bee sting.
For sure.
You know, bees do that all the time, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is when Carolyn began to do large amounts of historical research on her old farmhouse. With this research, Carolyn learned about Bathsheba, a woman who was believed to be a witch. This accusation was because of an incident that involved Bathsheba. One night, an infant that Bathsheba was caring for suddenly died with no explanation. After the child was examined, they found a puncture wound at the bottom of the child's skull, which looked like it was caused by a large sewing needle. Sorry. The strange thing was, that's what Carolyn's wound looked like. The family decided to call the Warrens for help.
Time to call in the Warrens.
Wait, so that's just what sets it off? That's what sets it off?
What sets it off?
Oh, I'm going to put a little pin right in her leg, and I hope the Warrens come this time.
I want them. We want the Warrens.
Here. Boop. Oh. Gotta call them
out. It's like those signs you see at college game day that say, we want whatever team.
Yeah.
The ghosts were like, we want the Warrens.
We want Bama.
We want Bama. All right. During the first visit from the Warrens, Carolyn Perrin presented Lorraine with her journal of all strange occurrences and told her about her findings on Bathsheba, who was the spirit that loathed and tortured her, plus the other spirits that may haunt the home. During their investigation, the Warrens found several hotspots, one being the pantry door, which led to the laundry room. Lorraine stepped into the room but quickly backed out, claiming, "Terrible. Something awful happened here. Violent. The poor thing. So young. A girl. Blood. Definitely a female."
That's all she said?
Yep. That's when Carolyn told Lorraine that the pantry door would often open by itself.
Oh, it's just...
At one point, the family pushed a desk against it, but the door managed to push the desk out of the way. Roger told the Warrens about the foul, dead smell that was spread through the house, which originated in the pantry. The families would learn that 11-year-old Prudence Arnold had been attacked in the pantry when she lived there, and was killed by her throat being slit.
A pantry. Ooh, I'm gonna go grab me some gushers real quick. I hope no one attacks me.
I'm sure they didn't have gushers when Prudence was alive, since her name is Prudence.
Are you hating on people named Prudence?
No. Before the Warrens left, Lorraine wanted to go downstairs. When she was shown Roger and Carolyn's bedroom, Lorraine told them, "No one should sleep in this bedroom." Lorraine even told Carolyn she should board the room up. The Warrens asked if they could come another time to talk to the Perrin's daughters.
Roger Perrin was still a little skeptical after the Warrens left. He didn't believe the Warrens and was nervous for them to talk to his daughters. His skepticism soon turned to concern for his family's safety when he noticed an overwhelming number of flies in the home. Okay. No matter how hard he tried, Roger could never get rid of the flies. Sometimes flies would appear and then disappear, or the house would become infested with them. And the season didn't matter. It could be the height of summer or the dead of winter, and the flies would be there. The strange thing was, the Warrens warned Carolyn about the presence of flies. They told her that the flies in the home are bat flies, the devil's pet.
The Warrens' second visit was when the couple talked to the Perrin daughters. Ed Warren talked a lot to Cindy Perrin, who said the spirits were communicating with her. She said within the first two nights, she was hearing disembodied voices coming from all corners of her room. Those voices would all say the same thing over and over. "There are 7 dead soldiers in the wall." Cindy told Ed that the voices only came at night, but they came every night. When the voices came, so would a chill, followed by an unpleasant smell that would fill the room. No one else in the house reported hearing voices, though. Cindy also revealed that during twilight hours, she was visited by a young girl who cried for her mom for hours. Cindy told Ed that the little girl, quote-unquote, loved her. The girl would float out of the closet, had no hands or face, and her neck was at an unnatural angle, implying her neck had been broken. Ed ended his conversation with the young girl because he didn't want to traumatize her. I mean, obviously. But what Ed didn't know is that Carolyn was having encounters with a similar entity, but this entity resembled more of a woman than a girl.
Does an entity be changing? Carolyn had several encounters with this entity, but there was one particular night that spooked Carolyn. Carolyn and Roger were sleeping when Carolyn heard footsteps coming into the room. When she opened her eyes, she saw a grotesque feminine figure floating towards the bed. She tried to scream, but no noise came out, and she was unable to wake Roger. No matter how hard she pulled his hair and hit him, much like Cindy's experience, the entity did not have a distinguishable face. Its neck was at an unnatural angle, plus an icy chill and the smell of death accompanied the figure. As the figure floated closer to the bed, it reached out its fingers, which weren't attached to a hand. Plus, the figure had no feet, so what made the footstep noise? Carolyn, who was still unable to make a sound, quietly whispered, "God help me." Suddenly, the figure disappeared. Carolyn turned over to see Roger covered in red marks and scratches. Once she was able to wake her husband, he did not know or remember the events that happened.
The Warrens returned in January of 1974. Ed focused on talking to Nancy about her experiences. Nancy recalled a time she was playing hide-and-seek with her sisters. This, unlike the hide-and-clap that is shown in the Conjuring movie, they were playing hide-and-seek. She found a spot behind the chimney in the boarding room, which is a warm room off of the kitchen. It's very strange. Anyways. After a few minutes, Nancy noticed the room's temperature dropped severely, and the small room filled with a horrible smell. Nancy tried to scream, but was unable to make any noise. Luckily, Cindy sensed where her sister was hiding, but the door refused to open when Cindy pulled on it. Cindy cried out for her mother to come and help, but her screams were muffled, much like what was happening to Nancy inside the room. Fearing for her life, Nancy began to pray. The door suddenly swung open, and Cindy pulled her little sister out of the room. While Nancy was telling this story to Ed and Lorraine, Christine interrupted her, saying that the event occurred a long time ago and the whole family was used to these events. Christine also said that the spirits wouldn't hurt the family. Lorraine asked Christine what she meant by that, and Christine said, "Because they know us. They share the house with us. They love us." The Warrens became concerned because that was the second time one of the girls said that the spirits loved them. The Warrens did not want the girls to gain an emotional attachment to these spirits and become more vulnerable to possession.
Later in the visit, Nancy revealed that her friend Katie had brought a Ouija board to the house in order to contact the spirits. Lorraine scolded the young girls for partaking in the act and warned the girls to never bring anything in the house to invoke the spirits or dabble in the dark arts. Lorraine then told the girls to repeat the following statement the next time they were visited by a spirit. "In the name of Jesus Christ, go back to where you came from. Leave us in peace."
The Warrens then asked to see the upstairs, having already toured the downstairs of the house. The group first stopped in Nancy and April's room. She detected a presence in the room. The two girls revealed that they would hear footsteps coming up the stairs, and then they would stop at their door. Their bedroom door would suddenly swing open on its own, but nobody would be on the other side. April claims that she had seen the man responsible for opening the door, and he smelled sweaty, like he had been working hard for a long time. The girls said they named the spirit Manny, and it was the same spirit that the girls had seen on move-in day. Manny was actually a man by the name of Johnny Arnold. Johnny Arnold committed suicide in the small attic space in the girls' room, but the family said the spirit never caused the family any harm.
The next stop was Cindy's room. Cindy showed them one particular wall in her room which she believed was the wall that the seven dead soldiers were buried in. Lorraine put her hand up against the wall and repeated what she told the girl to say in the presence of a spirit. Lorraine said she felt so many spirits in the room, but she believed the source of these spirits was in the room below them, which belonged to Carolyn and Roger. Next, the Warrens entered Andrea's room, which contained the small boarding room where Nancy hid during hide-and-seek. Lorraine opened the door to that room, but quickly backed out, saying no one should ever go in that room. The Warrens asked the young girls to leave the house so they could talk to Roger and Carolyn. In this conversation, the couple said they believed the house contained a demonic spirit which would eventually be known as Bathsheba. The Warrens would make a fourth visit to the house, but that visit was undocumented by either party.
While the Warrens were away, Carolyn became more oppressed. She was continuously visited by spirits which were trying to deteriorate her health and sanity or trying to kill her. Carolyn was always tired and began to eat very little. Although the Warrens wanted to visit the family again, Carolyn did not allow it because she was afraid of how their presence may affect the spirits. Lorraine would plead with Carolyn over the phone, saying she thought Carolyn would die if she didn't allow them back in the house. Even though Carolyn's health slowly deteriorated, she refused to let the Warrens back in her home. It took Lorraine weeks to finally convince Carolyn to let them return.
The night the Warrens were headed to the Perrin house for their fifth visit, the Perrin family noticed that the spirits were getting restless. The spirits had been quiet for some time, but with the conversation about the Warrens' arrival, activity began again. The Warrens came up with a group that consisted of a medium, a shaman, a priest, and the Warrens' film crew. This agitated Roger, and he demanded that the Warrens leave. His anger gave off a negative energy, which would allow the malevolent spirits to feed. His energy was all the house needed to fully break down Carolyn.
Okay, so we've gotten to the part, the most iconic part, probably, of this whole case. Obviously, the night of the seance. If anybody knows anything about the Perrin case, the seance is the most important part. So, not that it's like a trigger warning, because it's not like anything disgusting happens, but if you're not one for scary paranormal things, this one kind of goes into more detail than what we've ever gone into, so I just want to warn you guys. Okay.
You didn't read this part to me, so I'm just kind of concerned.
As the Warrens' crew set up, Lorraine went to talk to Carolyn, who seemed very unresponsive, almost like she was not registering anything that Lorraine said. Lorraine lifted the woman's head to see her eyes, which seemed very dark and distant. Tears trickled down Carolyn's face, and she had a very fearful look on her face. Lorraine said that Lorraine said that immediate action was required, or they would lose Carolyn's soul. Roger said the seance was still not a good idea because of how weak Carolyn was, so Ed pulled him aside and explained to Roger the importance of the seance. They needed to figure out the true intent of the spirit that was targeting Carolyn. With Roger convinced, the group would wait an hour for any movement from Carolyn. She soon began to shiver, a cold chill moved through the house. Ed asked Carolyn if he could move her to the kitchen, but she was unable to form any words, so Ed picked her up and moved her to a chair at the kitchen table. Roger, who was terrified for his wife, refused to sit at the table with the group. But Ed was finally able to convince Roger to stay, for, you know, the sake of his wife.
Yeah.
And all of the group members joined hands. Not long after the seance began, a gust of wind blew through the kitchen, and Carolyn picked her head up and began mumbling a series of incoherent words. Soon her words began to take shape, and she was speaking in a foreign language. Most people believe it was Latin, as one does when they're possessed by a demonic spirit, but it was never documented. She continued to speak in the unknown language with a voice that was not her own. She pulled her hands out of the other's hands. She curled her fingers into a fist, digging her fingernails into the palms of her hands. Her eyes shut open, and she pulled her knees up to her chin. Carolyn made a guttural noise that sounded a lot like a wild animal warning off an intruder. The medium never relented while this happened. And as the medium continued to contact the spirit, Carolyn's voice became even more sinister, and her head whipped back in the chair, where she let out an ungodly shriek, which caused another gust of wind to blow through the kitchen. This caused Roger to demand that the seance end. And that's when everything stopped. It got very still and very quiet. Suddenly, Carolyn's chair rose from the ground and shot straight back, traveling through the dining room and parlor. With a crash, the chair landed on the floor, and Carolyn's head hit the floor upon landing. The window shutters began to shake violently, and Roger went to retrieve his wife, placing her on the sofa. The house began to create awful noises, almost like it was trying to tear itself apart from the foundation. With that, Roger begged Carolyn to stay with him. And yelled out to the spirits, "Get the hell out of my house." The house fell still and quiet, and Roger demanded the Warrens to leave his house. The Warrens and their crew complied with Roger's request, leaving the family to cope with the events that just occurred in their home. According to Andrea, her father stayed on the floor with Carolyn all night, who eventually, they found out, suffered a concussion during the events.
She didn't die, did she?
If you continue to read.
Oh. The Warrens made one last visit to the Perrin home after the seance, but it was only to check on Carolyn. According to Andrea, the Warrens left without knowing if Carolyn had survived the night. The Warrens never reportedly visited the parent home after their final visit.
Woo!
Oh, wow.
Intense. Thoughts on the Warrens?
Mm.
Obviously, this is a little different than the movie.
A little bit.
Like, an exorcism did not happen.
No.
But your thoughts?
Definitely a very terrifying case.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, you didn't read me that seance part?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about it.
And picturing that in my head, I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight. I'm not even joking.
I think you'll be okay.
I don't know, man. I might need Mojo. He might need to come help me.
It's scary, yeah. Especially yeah. when that's not what they show in the movie. And honestly, I think your movies take a lot of creative liberty. But I honestly think this is, when you think about it, is way scarier than the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Any other thoughts?
Mm-mm. Really?
Okay, my thoughts on the Perrin case is... it's horrifying.
Well, yeah.
For sure. And it's... you know, for the time that it happened, you didn't have things like this happen. Like, you didn't talk about it. Mm-mm. So it was super... hush, hush. But then the Warrens come along and you have this couple now that's like advocating for these things. That's like, this is what's happening. We want to draw attention to it. And I think the Perrins definitely go down as one of the most famous, if not the most famous Warren case. You could argue the Amityville Horror, which we've talked about.
You should go watch it.
You should go listen to that episode.
I'm thinking you should really go watch that one. I'm thinking you should.
Watch it? Or listen to it?
You know, listen. I'm thinking you should listen.
I think you should really listen to the Amityville Horror episode.
I'm thinking you would like it.
I'm thinking you would like it. Season 1 finale. Go find it. Anyways.
Continue.
So, it's just... it's so good. And it's horrifying to think that these... well, mostly the mother was targeted, Carolyn.
Yeah.
Obviously, what we didn't touch on too much is that... the Warrens and the Roger and Carolyn believed that Bathsheba was, like, the mistress of the house. So she was trying to win Roger.
Oh.
If you know what I'm saying.
That's what they were going for?
Yes. So Ooh. She was trying to get rid of Carolyn.
Competing. And, that's not what it looked like in the movie.
But you have to think about it. She was trying to get rid of her, yes?
Yeah, but she also was trying to get rid of the kids, too.
Yes, that's what comes with the...
because maybe she just wanted Roger.
Bathsheba... exactly. That's the whole thing.
Like, just Roger himself?
Yeah. That's what she wanted. She... yeah. Mm-hmm. How many mistresses do you know that would want the children?
I don't want any mistresses.
Don't you watch the movies?
Yeah, but not many children are involved.
Anyways... but I think it's scary in that fact. But also, when you have 5 young girls who have to go through this at, like, a younger age. Obviously, Andrea and...
were they part of the séance?
No. Interesting fact. Thank you for bringing that up. Andrea and one of her sisters, I don't remember exactly which one, snuck downstairs during said séance and watched this happen. That's why Andrea knows about it.
How old was she at this time?
She's the oldest. I believe she was our age in high school.
Kids, let's get in the car. Let's go for a drive for
kids
a little bit.
Kids these days.
Let's go for a drive for a little bit.
I know, in the movie when she takes him back to the house.
Yeah.
Kids, hop in the car. We're going to go get ice cream.
After you die, I'm going to kill you.
But it's really scary, and I've always...
so much hair.
It's scary, and I don't like it. But this
no
is,
one likes it.
This is why we picked this case to do today.
Yeah.
The last episode of Spooky Season.
Yeah, definitely one of their most terrifying cases.
Yeah, I don't know which one I would put over it. The Enfield Haunting is kind of scary, but like...
aw, dude, that was just old Bill Wilkins. They just didn't understand him.
They didn't understand him.
I feel bad for that man.
He was just misunderstood.
He was possessing people because he was possessed. It was possessception.
Possessception. Was that how it went, though?
It's how it went in the movie, so it's gotta be right?
I don't think Bill Wilkins was, like, the actual spirit, though. Like the mean spirit. Like, he was kind of portrayed as in the movie. Like, I don't think he was being held on to by another demonic spirit.
No, but...
I honestly don't think that's how that works.
No, but, you know, they seem to target old Bill Wilkins, and I feel like he has to be some part of that, and I just feel bad for him.
Justice for Bill Wilkins.
He was misunderstood.
He was misunderstood. We're getting way off topic. No, the Perrin family...
Not gonna say Bathsheba was misunderstood.
That chick deserved it. She deserved the witchcraft claims. As much as I loved the witches,
you know,
of Salem and all of that.
I don't think it was her. It was a bit drafty those days.
We don't be killing children. We don't like that. We don't appreciate that.
Oh, it was a bee sting.
Yeah, when you're watching BuzzFeed Unsolved, you guys should go watch BuzzFeed Unsolved. Ashton and I love BuzzFeed Unsolved. Maybe that will be our question. Are they a Shaniac or a Bugara? Right?
Yeah.
A Bugara?
What are you?
I'm a Bugara for sure.
No, Shaniac.
But like, I feel like... Okay, this is how I feel.
That's because
I feel like actually. I'm Ryan of the duo here. Ooh. I'm very serious and like, I want to get the job done where you're just like... But like...
I'm just here to make stupid jokes.
Right. And that's what Shane does. And that's why I'm okay. It's a good balance.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go cry now.
Yeah. Do it. Okay, the parents. Very scary. If you could use one word to describe the parents' case, and if I swear if you say scary, like, I need a good word.
Okay. Fake. I'm kidding.
Hot take? Okay, I'm ready.
I'm kidding. In a way, it would say, gruesome.
Gruesome. Okay.
What would you say?
Chilling.
Oh. Oh, she went for the chilling.
Chilling. Because it kind of just leaves you with, like, a weird feeling in your stomach. You're like, oh my gosh. This poor family.
Poor family. I feel so bad for them. But at the same time, I'm kind of happy that it was them and not me.
Not me. Anyways.
I'm kidding.
In the next segment, because this has already been running for, like, half an hour. In the next segment, we're going to talk about where the parents are now.
Mom.
And I actually found something really interesting that we're going to talk about, and it kind of discusses where the parents are now. But we're also going to talk about what happened on the set of the first Conjuring movie. Because there are some spooky things that happened, guys.
I don't know what happened, so...
Let me tell you.
You're going to have to tell me that before we get started, or you're going to just tell me when you tell them. Because
I don't know why. You're just going to let me take...
I'll let you take control of that part.
Yes! All right.
Because if you tell me, I'll still probably have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I kept the tabs open for you, so.
Where's the one that I
need? Well, you need both of them.
Oh, this one.
All right. And with that being said, guys, we will be right back.
Back again.
We're back. And let me just say, the Perrin family, they're coming home.
Wait, is that this year?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, actually.
So I wanted to talk about where the parents
are. Like tomorrow?
It's a 3-day event.
Oh, so I'm sure it's already started.
So I wanted to talk about where the parents are now, but I came across something that I wish I would have come across earlier. The Perrin family is returning to the real-life Conjuring House for a 3-day live Halloween event.
You cannot pay me enough money to do that.
I think that's kind of awesome. So, for the first time since experiencing their terrifying events, alongside Ed and Lorraine Warren, obviously in the 1970s, the family moved out early 80s.
I'm sure they did.
Because they didn't have any money, so they had to stay there. But the entire surviving Perrin family, which is, the people that are confirmed for going is Roger, Andrea, Christine, and Nancy. I'm sure Cindy is still alive. It's Andrea, Christine, Cindy, Nancy. I'm not sure where April is, if she's still alive. It says surviving family, and it lists all of them but April. So I don't know if April died. And I don't know if Carolyn is still alive. But I do know Roger, Andrea, Christine, and Nancy are all going back to the house.
Boy, Roger's gonna be getting old.
Well, yeah.
And, of course, some of this might you could be like people like me where you just don't want to ever go back there.
True. So this started on the 29th. The parents are going to be sharing their personal experiences and stories of living at the house, including the 1974 events. It's going to include paranormal. It includes paranormal investigations. Plus, they're going to talk with and look at the lives of the people that own the house now and who are actually selling it. It's on the market right now if anybody wants to buy it for $1.2 million. For anybody that doesn't know about where the Perrin family are now, myself included, you might be interested in, also if you're interested in their case, Andrew Perrin wrote a memoir called House of Darkness, House of Light in 2011, and this recaps the most terrifying experience of her life, which occurred during a seance at the home, which we discussed earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
She said, "What everyone witnessed that night left a permanent impression. We were all scared to death and scarred for life. My mother was attacked, some say possessed, by an entity. Her chair began to levitate, and then within a split second, she was thrown from the dining room to the parlor." That's horrifying.
That's scary. No.
Roger Perrin, who told the Warrens, "Get out of my house."
Yeah.
He says, "It was a very ugly scene, and I thank God my mother has no memory of the incident." That's what Andrea said. Mom recovered in time, but that singular event changed many lives, including my own. So, that's pretty... So, like, you get to... So, viewers will be able to monitor. They get to interact with the parents, and I think it's the Heinzens. I don't want to mispronounce her name, but I believe it's the Heinzens. And Andrea had some advice for people that either want to... Because you can stay in the house. Like, some... I know the family sometimes rents it out for an Airbnb. You can stay in the house. She has advice for those that stay and those that are just investigating. She said,
"Don't mess with them.
Woe be unto those who provoke in that house. Be reverent and respectful of forces you cannot control and beings who know the place far better than you because it was their house first. Tread lightly with love and humility."
Okay. Gladly do that when I walk in that house.
So... it's interesting because we don't know too much about some of the parents and if they're still alive and what's happening with them. But this is one of the first things I came across, and I thought that was actually really cool, and I didn't even know about it. So that was really interesting.
It takes a lot of guts to do that.
I really wish I would have learned about this sooner. I would have bought tickets to that thing. So I could just be streaming it all day.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? I'm right here.
But it's like, how would the house react with them returning? Because, you know, if they've never returned... There hasn't been any reported demonic occurrences in the house.
Well, I'm sure that seance helped.
Since this. But, like, I wonder what the parents coming back will do to the house.
Sure.
I'll do some more research in a couple of days, and maybe I'll let you guys know during our next episode.
Sure, unleash all sorts of darkness.
But I don't know. That's the thing. That's why I'm wondering what might happen.
Gosh darn it. Those stupid people are coming back
here. Gosh darn it. The parents.
Didn't we try and kick them out already?
I tried already once to get them out of here by possessing their mother. I gotta do it again.
I gotta bring the bees out again.
Stupid bees.
I gotta knock this Sith off the wall.
The Sith needs to fall off the barn wall.
Now what do I do? No, what am I supposed to do now? I can't even, like, get the Warrens here anymore.
They're
gone.
Ripped to the Warrens. That was really sad.
She only died like 2 years ago.
2 years ago. That's crazy that it's only been 2 years. What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I know that was kind of brief on where the parents are, but there's not a bunch of information on where they are. They've tried to have a private life since this.
I'm sure you...
Because... Go ahead.
I'm sure it's a lot easier than you think it is.
Well, you have to remember now the house is super iconic. Everybody knows where it is. But actually, when the Warrens were helping the parents... they went on their seminars, as you see in the Conjuring movies, but they would talk about the Perrin case that they were working on, and they would use the Perrin name.
Oh.
They did not think the people that would attend their seminars would go so far out of their way to find where the Perrins live. Oh, but they did.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
So the Perrins had many unwanted visitors besides the unwanted spirits in the house. And, you know, I feel bad for Carolyn because then... You have the Warrens talking about her, and she looks like this weak, oppressed, sad woman.
Yeah.
Who, she, you know, she's the possessed lady.
That's just kind of disrespectful.
Honestly, and like I said, I don't think Lorraine and Lorraine...
meant to.
Their whole point was not to have people go to the parent house.
Yeah, but I mean, they
could... Who goes out of their way in the 1970s?
A lot of people, I guess. But could you imagine, like, you're sleeping and someone's just like,
hey,
is this where the spookiness goes on?
Is this where the possessed lady lives? Mm-hmm.
Sure, she's upstairs. Go get her autograph or something.
Like, that poor woman. I feel so bad for her. She might attack
you, but, you know, what are you looking at?
The cat is looking at us.
Just some big stuff? You wanna? So, Mojo, how do you feel about the parent case? Thank you.
Anyways, so that's where the parents are now. Kind of brief, not a lot on them, though. But we're gonna get down to the good stuff, which I've learned in watching many, many interviews. People make fun of me for watching said interviews, but you learn a lot.
This is all you, because I have no idea what...
So, obviously, strange things happened in the parent home.
Obviously.
To the parents. But what you may not expect is strange things to happen on the set of The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but they did.
Did they?
On and off. So let me read you some things that have happened on the set of The Conjuring. Obviously, you had a very spiritual setting. Mm-hmm. Very spiritual set. The writers, directors, and producers on The Conjuring, and its obviously sequels and the franchise it has created, consulted extensively with Lorraine Warren until her death in 2019. Uh-huh. Obviously, Ed Warren was unable to work with the franchise because he died in 2006. But he did say, because this obviously... You know, these franchises aren't just, like, this quick thing that's thought of. Mm-mm. No, this is decades.
Yeah.
So they had actually talked to the Warrens when Ed was still alive about possibly doing something like this. And he said that out of all of their cases, this one had a profound effect on the Warrens themselves. And the late Ed Warren himself insisted to producer Tony De Rosa Grund that the first film that's made should be explicitly about his and his wife's investigations in the parent case.
Yeah.
So, we got this case first because of Ed Warren. Before he died. Just so you know. Obviously, you've had some other spinoffs or other movies that were inspired by the Warrens, like your Amityville Horrors and all that, which aren't involved in the Conjuring franchise, but, you know, whatever. Anyways, let's get right into it. Stop, don't sing the Crooked Man. Alright, the first person we're going to talk about who had some very strange experiences is Vera Farmiga. And she definitely was feeling who? The... Vera Farmiga.
Who?
Barry
Farmiga?
No, Vera Farmiga. No.
I really think it's Barry
Farmiga. Anyways, obviously... The actors, Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, had to have had a strong bond to their characters. You have to in order to play them correctly and have that chemistry. And obviously you wouldn't have a strong, successful franchise that comes out of that if you don't have it. But some things that happened to Vera Farmiga on and off the set are just a little more than a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain. Obviously, Vera Farmiga portrays Lorraine Warren, who found herself as a clairvoyant medium.
Yes.
That's what she claimed to be.
Yes.
Lorraine's, you know, spiritual connection, her connection to the spiritual world, may have rubbed off on Vera Farmiga, because Vera Farmiga found herself mysteriously and repeatedly waking up between the hours of 3 and 4 in the morning on set, when she was on set.
And she was on set?
Mm-hmm.
They sleep on set?
Yes, they have trailers and stuff.
The trailers and stuff. Yeah,
it's strange, because I have to note that the time frame we all know as...
The witching hour.
The witching hour. Or the devil's hour. It's a hour, basically, that's associated with the possibility or the chance of heightened supernatural activity.
Yes.
I don't know why we think... spirits and all of that hit their peak strength at this time. But it just happens.
That's the scariest time.
But it gets really strange because in the Conjuring film, the specific time window in which the witch character died, and the Warrens established this, was during the witching hour.
Yeah.
Farmiga was so shaken with this experience that she pointed it out to the director, the uncanniness of this connection. And she said her sleep troubles even persisted after the movie wrapped for several months.
Nope. Mm-mm. I'd be sleeping with, like, I'd be listening to something while I'm sleeping.
But it gets better. Okay. In addition to her sleep disturbances,
mm-hmm.
Vera Farmiga also had to deal with some very mysterious claw marks that seemed to follow her wherever she went.
It's just a bit of a draft.
This was both in physical and digital form. Hold on, it's really
digital form.
It's really scary. The first time she encountered a set of three mysterious claw marks, count them three, if we remember, demonic spirits mock the Holy Trinity
mm-hmm.
with three in groups of threes. So just keep that in mind. This is a little creepy. It's three claw marks. These claw marks compute on her computer screen.
Sorry. Yeah.
The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Yeah, no, I was just...
Father, Son, House of Gucci.
No. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
House of Gucci.
It's in the trailer.
Yes, I know.
Okay. these claw marks were appeared on her computer screen. She had been working on her laptop and she closed it to take a phone call. And the phone call was about being in The Conjuring, in which she expressed her interest in the project and her desire to work with Patrick Wilson.
Uh-huh.
And if he was in, she was in. So she's shut the computer, she's on the phone talking about The Conjuring. She opens her laptop again, obviously she's doing her work. And she finds three diagonal digital claw marks descending from right to left. I'm just gonna let that sit.
Wait, like on the computer?
Yes, on the screen.
So like if I went like this?
And it would make claw marks, yes. Not like dug into the computer. Like straight up on the computer.
You know, these technologies these days, I mean, they be doing crazy things.
Oh, hold on. It gets better.
How does it get better?
Later on set, she said she discovered three claw marks again, but this time, much closer to home. This time, the claw marks appeared on her thigh. Luckily, that was the last time they showed up for her. And she did say that the ones on her computer were slightly different. They were a little thicker from those that appeared on her leg. But she said, maybe, you know, supernatural forces after me, but not one, two supernatural forces.
Oh, it's just a draft. It's just the wind.
That made the claw marks? The
wind's picking up.
On her thigh.
Wind picks up all the time. I mean, it's just,
I mean, here,
people are weird.
Where's the picture? See?
Is that on the computer screen?
No, that's her leg. That's a picture of her holding up a picture she took of her with the claw marks. Picture section.
See, that's 100% the wind.
Okay. The wind, obviously. Anyways, on from Vera Farmiga.
Dang, he's really licking himself over there.
Ew.
He's really cleansing.
So, Joey King, who we all now know, she's quite popular now. She's in movies such as The Kissing Booth, and she was in the TV show called The Act. But she actually appeared in this film, playing Christine, who's one of the five parent daughters.
Okay.
She ended up covered in strange bruises after just a couple of weeks of shooting. But she didn't... obviously, at a young age, you can't do stunts and everything like that.
It was just iron deficiency problems.
And Patrick Wilson insisted in an interview that there was no rational explanation for why a child would sustain such marks on this set. The production was very strict about not putting the children in physical danger for stunts or any other reason, and King never had a bruising problem before or since filming that show. That movie.
Debunked again. Sorry, continue. Let's hear the other one I can hear.
Obviously, the weird thing was that in the movie and in real life, Carolyn was bruised from her the spirit wanting to possess her. And so people were like, oh no, Joey King. Mm-hmm. So that's the weird connection. Anyways, the artifact room on set was just a little too real.
Did they actually use the Warren's Occult Museum?
So we all know the Warren's Occult Museum, the special artifact room. It's very important to the Warrens and in the Conjuring universe. And obviously, it's a huge focus of the Annabelle franchise, because Annabelle sits in her little case, does her thing.
Just chilling.
Yes, yes, she loves it. Anyways.
Are you sure she loves it?
Yes. The Warrens keep relics from all of their cases. I'm not sure exactly which one they keep from this case. In the movie, it's the music box.
I don't think they have the music box.
But I don't know what the actual relic is. It might be a music box. I'm not really sure. I'd have to do some more research.
A needle.
I might have to do some more research on that. And obviously, it reminded them of their lessons that they've learned, the evil they've encountered, and the people they helped. But they did this through destroying.
We're going to get some hacks here in a second.
Sorry, our cat has a hairball. Anyways, it's a very strange place, and it's in their collection. It's in their basement.
Yup. It's a weird-looking house, if that's, like...
It's weird. But obviously they had to have a replica built for the set, so they had to replicate and they actually visited the occult museum, you can find pictures of that and stuff, but they had to replicate it, so yeah. They had to build all of these artifacts and everything. And one artifact was a wooden pig.
I never saw a wooden pig.
Producer Rob Cohen said certain objects, most notably a certain wooden pig, would mysteriously move around the room. And now part of me is like, okay, maybe you're just like, tricks are being played on you.
Yeah.
But like, maybe, you know, maybe someone's like trying to be funny. But not really sure.
You know what? Debunked. Wind. Picking up again. Just taking the pig all over the place. It is terrible. Wait, did you have to show me that?
Yes.
It is 10:30 at night and you had to show me that picture?
Obviously. Oh, another thing is, you have to create a very good resemblance of characters, of spirits, of character spirits. And so it is said that The Conjuring did a very good job of replicating these people. Mm-hmm. One notably being Bathsheba.
That's the one on top of the dress.
Yes.
The wardrobe, sorry.
So the Perrin family actually visited the set during the filming of The Conjuring. Mm-hmm. And it says the set and props were so realistic that when the actual Perrin family visited the set, Cindy, who is the second youngest daughter, and she had been a child at the time of the film's events, but was middle-aged at the time of the visit. Obviously, you grow up. She freaked out upon seeing the production's witch, Bathsheba. She ran over to Patrick Wilson and, like, clung to him in fear.
Huh.
She was so affected by, obviously that memory is being unlocked and it's awful, but they did such a good job resembling it that she freaked out. And I think that's kind of scary. Like, how do you know what Bathsheba looked like?
I guess they nailed that one.
I know. It's just strange to me. I don't know why. She said that Cindy said that was probably the most accurate thing she's ever seen, and that's exactly what Bathsheba looked like, or one of the spirits looked like in the house. And I'm like, that's weird, because there's no clear pictures of Bathsheba, and obviously there's no clear pictures of her as a demonic.
No.
Entity. And, like, obviously you can go off what the parents describe, but...
You can, but, like, did they really get that much off of them?
So I think that's kind of weird. One of the other weird things is when the family visited the set of the film, one of the original Perrin girls told co-writer Chad Hayes that she had a feeling something bad was really going to happen that day they visited the set. Maybe not on set, but something bad was going to happen to somebody involved with the...
Mm-hmm. Did something bad happened?
Later that day, to the shock of the production and the family, the girl's mother, Carolyn Perrin, fell and broke her hip so seriously that they had to operate and replace it that day. The family got the call right after the incident with Cindy and the witch.
Wait. Which Carolyn broke their hip?
Perrin.
Like the no, like actual Karen.
Yeah.
Carolyn, or like oh.
Their mother, Carolyn Perrin, fell and broke her hip.
No, she just tripped.
And so they obviously had to leave the set to tend to their mother, and I mean, this would also be my first reaction, is that Bathsheba was trying to do something to her.
Yeah. Maybe she just tripped. I mean,
and trips. But Carolyn Perrin was the only one that day not to visit the set.
Coincidences.
That's so weird.
It's not, though. She just tripped.
That's so weird.
Step on a crack, you break your mama's back.
Lorraine Warren showed the crew and the actors and actresses some very creepy videos they have from the actual case and all of that. You can find certain tapes on YouTube. I'm sure you can find them on the Google.
The Googlies, the interwebs.
It may take a little digging because these aren't public.
The face chats, the Insta books, the face snaps.
That's one of the reasons they got so detailed, was because they were able to hear it and see it.
Anything else for us?
One of the movie's writers was haunted, apparently.
Oh, whatever.
Writer Carrie Hayes actually had to confide in the real Lorraine Warren on The Conjuring set about something he was going through. Something Lorraine seemed to think was connected to the fact that he was spending his days on set and away from home. While Hayes was away, his wife would find mysterious water formations appearing around his house without explanation. At first, he thought his elderly dog was to blame, and his first response was to remind his wife that the dog had bladder problems and needed to be taken out frequently. But his wife insisted that not only had she taken the dog out, but that the water didn't smell at all despite requiring 3 huge beach towels to be cleaned up. That would be one huge dog.
That's a big dog.
Lorraine deduced that Hayes was dealing with a water poltergeist. She informed him that spirits often reveal themselves more when men are away and women are home alone and defenseless, so wives and mothers often encounter more of the supernatural.
Huh.
Additionally, Lorraine said a water poltergeist feeds off adolescent angst, which is why the water formations always appeared after a spat between Hayes and one of his teenage sons.
A spat was a fight?
Yes. Once he understood the presence, Hayes was able to get to the root of the situation. Patrick Wilson also said that his house was haunted, and he confided in Lorraine. But overall, the actor seemed to have a more devil-may-care attitude about it. Obviously, Lorraine was a huge asset to these movies when she was alive.
So the first two, I think.
Yes.
The first two I know of.
Yes, the first two, and then she probably was helping with Annabelle and the nun.
Yeah. I'm sure she helped, kind of helped with the third one.
She would...
Mm-hmm.
She's just weird. Over the phone, she would be asking things and all of that. Like, how could she see that? She's not even in the presence of them.
Could you... That's so... Could you... No, like... Let's say you're having problems at home. Like, little ghosty-ghost action. So you're just like, you know, I'll see Lorraine tomorrow on set. I'll just ask her tomorrow what's going on.
But you're talking to her, and she's like, so you have to ask me a question. You're like, how you know I didn't even say that?
You know, I'll talk to Lorraine Warren. You know, she'll be on set tomorrow.
And then she calls.
Yo, you got problems at your house? What?
What?
Nah, dude, I'll just...
And obviously the creepiness continued onto the set of The Conjuring, too.
I'm sure it did.
Which we have to touch on a little bit, because it is The Conjuring. But they filmed on the most haunted Warner Bros. Set, which is Studio 4.
Oh, God, no, Studio 4.
What? They had a priest actually bless the set. Since the first Conjuring, they've had a priest come bless every single set.
So not.
Because they don't want it happening again.
We have spent more time on the stupid Conjuring than we have on the actual Perrin family.
Okay, fine. I'll stop.
No, I'm done now. Dude, no.
We'll talk about the Enfield haunting some other time. We can get into The Conjuring, too. If you prefer. Please stop. So, we'll do closing thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you start.
Closing thoughts. Well, to start, it is 10:33 at night. I am currently not going to sleep at the moment because I am picturing a lot of things in my mind, and they're not very nice things.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine that this family went through maybe a million times worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really think they just dealt with some draft. Some wind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she had iron deficiency problems. I don't know. I'm just kidding. I feel like what they went through is god-awful and something that you never want to go through. Well, you never want to go through that. But it's just... And it's hard to even think that someone could go through something like that. And it even cross over to when you're filming a movie about it.
So what would you say to people that... Well, either listen, because obviously people are skeptical, so it's okay if you listen and you're skeptical.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. We don't need to be bashing people.
No, it's not. Yes, what was your question?
What would you say to people that are skeptical about this case?
I don't know. I don't feel like it's up to me to change your mind, but I would say, you know, maybe just try and look further at what actually happened to them.
Because...
And try and see if you can come up with an explanation for it.
What we see in the movie, which a lot of people have seen, is the Warren's experience.
Yeah.
We see what happened through the Warren's eyes. A lot of people don't know what happened.
We don't know what happened on a nightly basis. I'm sure it was terrifying.
Okay. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. What do I want to say? I want to say that it's... I love getting to talk about these things because it allows me to educate myself more on the supernatural and to really get to talk about it, but it also allows me to interact with you guys and talk to you guys about it and maybe change your mind. I would love to try and change your guys' mind because I don't know, I think it's real and there's reasons people don't think it's real, but I think those reasons sometimes are a little stupid. But overall, this case is one of the most chilling that you'll ever learn about. It's a scary house.
It's quite a scary house.
It's a scary spirit. Multiple spirits. So many spirits. It involves a young family. It involves especially young girls who don't know any better, who are now scarred basically for life. It involved a mom who
doesn't even remember what
only
happened.
Yeah, who only doesn't remember what happened during the séance or anything like that. Only wanted best for her girls. Even if that meant she was gonna die, she didn't want the spirits to attack the girls. And I think that's crazy. And then you have a father who's looking out for his whole family. He doesn't want the Warrens there, but the Warrens...
They're trying to help.
Are trying to help.
I understand where he's coming from, though.
You know? But, like, you know, people are skeptical of the Warrens, where the Warrens only trying to help to better themselves and to profit from this. I don't know. I've never been able to talk to Ed or Lorraine. But I love this case. It's scary. It's spooky. It's chilling. It's suspenseful. And overall, what the heck? Like, how does this stuff happen? I don't get it.
Mm.
Well, I mean, I get it. It's the supernatural. But it's super scary is what it is.
Mm. Yeah.
And I really think you guys should go watch the Conjuring movie.
Only if you want to.
You should watch it.
Only if you want to.
To understand, though... No, to give yourself more of a visual. Because sometimes it's hard to picture those things.
Uh-huh.
But to give yourself more of a visual in what is happening, I would watch the movie. Obviously, it's not real. In the movie, there's an exorcism.
He did not perform an exorcism.
Ed did not perform an exorcism.
Because there's a difference in, you know, saying you're unauthorized for an exorcism in a movie and doing it in real life.
That's frowned upon by the church. Not allowed by the church.
Yeah,
but, like, that didn't happen. A seance was conducted.
Yeah.
I think at one point Carolyn mentions that they found it in an auction by the bank.
Yeah.
Not quite how that happened. Obviously, some of the things are exaggerated. The family will tell you it's been exaggerated, but it's only from the Warren's perspective.
Yeah.
That's all we have. We haven't really talked to the parents, and now we're giving them a chance. So, if you guys are interested in it, I would keep yourselves updated. Make sure maybe in a couple of days you look up what happened when the parents went back to the house. I know I will be doing it.
Maybe we'll get a spinoff after we learn what happened with the parents.
That would be so cool. I would actually totally appreciate James Wan.
And, like, just give you their perspective on what they dealt with on a nightly basis.
That would be really cool. Quick question. Huh? What do you think the next Conjuring movie should be?
Amityville Horror. The Amityville Horror. Sorry for people that don't understand that.
The Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What do you think?
I like the Amityville Horror. That one's good. Or the... I don't want to mispronounce it, so I'm not even going to try.
The.
It's some haunting.
Smurl?
Yes, Smurl. Thank you. That one's really good, so I would like to see that one, too. Yeah. I told you, maybe we should just start a Warren series. We've already talked about two, right?
Just one.
Amityville?
We
didn't talk about their investigation.
No, we just talked about what, you know, what's going on in the Amityville.
We talked about what happened in the Amityville. I don't think we've talked about any other Warrens. Obviously, no. Our first episode was...
The Conjuring Universe.
The Conjuring Universe. But I don't think we've actually talked about any other things. We talked about Robert the Doll. We've talked about the Cecil Hotel, Amityville. Dybbuk Box. Devil's... Oh, well, kind of the Devil's Rocking Chair.
Kind of.
Because that's the Glatzels.
Yeah.
But we briefly talked about that. So, yeah. I think we should start a Warren series.
Okay.
Let us know.
That'll be
the question. On Instagram. Or on our website.
No, the question is going to be, are you a Shinyak or a Bugara?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And go watch BuzzFeed Unsolved. It's their last Supernatural season. Go and binge it.
Make sure you watch the first one. Well, the third one, I think it is. Don't watch the first two. The first two are useless.
Just go watch BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Supernatural. Or True Crime.
True Crime is good too. Certain episodes.
But mainly Supernatural.
Supernatural. And then tell us if you're a Shaniac or a Bugara.
And I'll put it as the question.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, everybody. That is the end of spooky season. Tomorrow is Halloween. We filmed this episode in the dark. It's raining outside. It was a perfect night.
10 o'clock at night.
It was a perfect night to do a spooky episode.
It is 1 hour and 41 minutes past my bedtime.
It was a perfect night to do a spooky episode.
Yes, it was.
And we just want to thank you for sticking with us through spooky season. We've got a couple of very fun episodes coming at you for November. And then December.
It's an interesting
one. We're really going to dive into some true crime right off the bat in December.
We are.
So you really need to get on that.
I do.
Okay, everybody, thank you for sticking with us for spooky season. We hope you enjoy your Halloween. Wait, should we tell them what? Maybe that should be our question. Can we have two questions?
No, just one. You should ask it on the Instagram.
Let us know on Instagram what you're dressing up as for Halloween. We would love to know what everybody's dressing up as for Halloween. We are dressing up as...
Vision. I was going to go for you to say
yours. Oh, and Agatha. And my friend is going to be Wanda. From WandaVision, guys, if you didn't know that.
I think they figured that one.
Our big Marvel nerd selves. Actually, just me. Anyways. Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining us for spooky season. And for a spooky Warren episode. And with that, happy hauntings. Hey, what's up, guys? It's your favorite dead duo. Why did you have to take such a deep breath?
I'm sorry. You can't even hear.
This case is one of the most well-known Ed and Lorraine Warren cases. Plus, it was the beginning of one of the best horror franchises, The Conjuring.
Yeah, we have briefly touched on this case before, but for those of you who